You're listening to Boat Radio. I'm Mike McDowell, and it is a rainy day here in Mallorca. The clouds closed in last night, the tops of the mountains disappeared, and the air began to feel heavy and close. The rain began to fall late morning and stopped just a few minutes ago, and it feels like it could start up at any moment. And I am sitting, as ever, in my garden in the little mountain city of Soia, so you might just hear the rain in the background on the canopy. My guests today are great friends of Boat Radio. In fact, Chris and Melody Di Croce were our very first interviewees. I was going to say, I've written in this introduction well over a year ago, but as we've just discovered, it was almost to the minute, exactly a year ago. And that recording served as our test transmission for several weeks, months even, repeated on a loop while we prepared to get underway. Back then, they were in St. Petersburg, Florida, but things have changed. Chris and Melody, great to talk to you again. How are you both?
Doing great, Mike. Great to talk to you as well.
Couldn't be better. We're doing fantastic, and it's great to talk to you again on the same day a year later.
I know, isn't it strange? I didn't plan that at all. It's so weird. So, St. Petersburg, Florida is like way in your rear view mirror now. Where are you?
Right now, we are sitting on the Rio Dulce River in Guatemala, right next to the town of Fronteras.
Okay, so for those of us without a chart in front of us and who don't know the area, is this Caribbean or Pacific side?
We're on the Caribbean, Western Caribbean side, just south of Belize. When you leave Belize, there's a little nook in there that kind of pokes back in. We're way about 21 miles up the Rio Dulce.
21 miles. And there's a huge inland lake there, or inland sea almost, a huge lake, right?
Yeah, Lake Isabel is I got to get my bearings. It's west. You come up the Rio Dulce through this incredibly big gorge. Did you hear that bilge pump kick on?
Yeah, but that's fine. Don't worry about it. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Sorry about that. We are in our boat. So, you come up this beautiful gorge, and it's quite the contrast to the reefs and blue water of Belize and out islands and all that stuff. You go under this massive, go through this massive 300-foot gorge, and you up this freshwater river. It's amazing.
Melody, why Guatemala? How have you ended up here?
Well, good question, Mike. We basically, when we decided to take off last year, we said we were going to plan to get to the Rio, and we wouldn't make any plans after that. So we were going to go to the Bahamas and do the Eastern Caribbean originally. And then we just kind of started reading about some places we'd always wanted to visit, Cuba, and then just based on, you know, the trades and some of the things we found out, we decided to do the Western Caribbean and go through Mexico and Belize and Guatemala and kind of push ourselves and our limits, the language barrier and things like that. So we wanted to challenge ourselves a little bit more. We had heard that it was some really challenging sailing, and it was. We're so excited to be here.
Well, it sounds fantastic. I'm really looking forward to hearing all about it. But, Chris, did you stop in at Cuba on the way?
Yeah, Cuba was when we departed St. Pete. Our first stop was the Dry Tortugas, and then Cuba was immediately following that. We spent about 16 days there.
I really feel like I should go. Everybody says you should go soon before it changes, but does it look like it's about to change?
No, it hasn't changed very much. And we had the same thing. We were like, oh, we got to go now. But there's still, you know, the infrastructure and the way, you know, we don't understand enough about the government and the way it works. But I don't think it's changing anytime soon. But you never know what could happen. You know, we just wanted to get there before McDonald's and Starbucks goes up. And we absolutely fell in love with it. And even more so than we thought we would. It was absolutely beautiful. But the people made it such an amazing experience.
We should explain all of this, shouldn't we? Because for people who are new to Chris and Melody Di Croce, you met in Nashville, you were working in the music industry. Chris, you are a singer, songwriter. Cuba's music, presumably, was something that really interested you, right?
Yeah, I mean, Cuba has always been, I'm not even sure why it's always been on my radar, but like Mel said, I wanted to get there too before Starbucks and all that stuff. And I remember, I don't even know how long ago it was now because I'm terrible with this, but Ry Cooder did a record down there. Remember with the Buena Vista Social Club.
And yeah, I remember that. And that is, I don't know for sure, but I'm going to say 1989.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that was, you know, and then that was the first time that, you know, we all really got a taste of what they were doing down there. And then, you know, Mark Ribot, who plays guitar for Tom Waits and many, many other people, he had a really cool band called Los Cubanos Prosthesis or something like that, the Prosthetic Cubans or whatever. He did a couple records, and I really fell in love with that. And then when we were there, there's music everywhere. It's just all over the streets. There's music just pouring out of the buildings, and the Cubans are a vibrant group of people, man. They were smiling and happy, and they were so nice. It was beyond what I expected. It really was.
So it's a place where people love life.
Yeah, I mean, there's hardships there, don't get me wrong, and they live with very little, and the streets and the infrastructure is crumbling, but you know, we walk down the street and almost every guy there had a New York Yankees hat on, right? And I had a Phillies baseball hat on. I was trying to trade because I was like, come on, man, somebody has to represent the hometown. But they just smile, and they're gregarious, and they approached us on the street, and they were helpful. I mean, it's just really funny because we thought, you know, we would have so much difficulty with the language barrier, and we thought we would have trouble walking through, you know, back neighborhoods. We were like, oh, is it going to be dangerous? It was everything but that. We had people patient with us as we practiced our terrible Spanish, and they walked us to, when they knew we were looking for something in their neighborhood, they walked us right there, and it was really, really wonderful.
Mm. Melody, are there problems for Americans going to Cuba?
You know, we were worried about that, and I'm sure, you know, it kind of depends on who you get on what day when you send in your applications. We did the Coast Guard, what was it,
3300 form? Yeah,
we sent that in well in advance, just thinking it would take months. I think we got ours back in a matter of a couple of weeks. We had no problems. And we've heard of other people that, you know, have been boarded or who have, you know, had a little bit more difficulty. But the Cubans, they absolutely were welcoming to us. And so I think the only issue would be with, you know, if you were coming back from Cuba, which we haven't, you know, done yet, like going to the States, you might have some issues. But we had none. And we had our dog with us, too, which was really crazy. We were so worried that, you know, we'd have problems with him. And it was really easy.
Right. Okay. Well, I guess taking Jet back into the U.S. is going to be the problem, right? Or not?
You know, I don't think it will be. We've got, you know, international health certificates. We've got one from the United States, which we had to get, but we also got one in Mexico, and because they needed a more current copy. And we also have our small vessel reporting card, which I don't, you know, a lot of your listeners may be interested in this. You go, you know, before you leave the States, obviously, then you go to, you know, your local office, and you can get a small vessel reporting card, which allows you to check back into the United States just over the telephone. So they don't come aboard your vessel. You don't have to go in and do any kind of paperwork. So I think that, you know, we've got his proof of rabies vaccine, which is good for 5 years. If we go back in the next 5 years, we're just going to call it in, and that's that.
Well, that's great. It's great that Jet's with you. So Cuba, where next? Where did you go after Cuba?
We did Cuba. We did Havana. Then we did the North Shore. We did some anchorages across the Northwest Shore. And then we did the hop across the Yucatan Channel over to Isla Mujeres, which was awesome. Because this was all a first for us, you know, traveling international, as Mel said, with the dog. We had a ton of reservations, but we hit Isla. It was a 22-hour sail from Cabo San Antonio, which is Los Moros, the western point of Cuba. And then from Isla, we just went down the coast of Mexico, stopping in many different anchorages until we hit San Pedro Belize.
Melody, where were your favorite spots along that coast of Mexico?
Ooh, well, we both loved Isla. I mean, that was, you know, so much so that we even thought, you know, maybe we could buy a little place here one day to settle down. We really loved Isla. A couple of the other, one of the difficult things about Mexico is you've got some spots that you can anchor in, but a lot of them are pretty exposed and open. And the only town that we anchored in was a little place called Puerto Aventuras, and it was very touristy. It was a lovely town. You know, it had everything we needed, and it provided us refuge from some really nasty weather for 11 days. But I would definitely say Isla was our favorite spot. We didn't get to anchor out or visit, Puerto Morelos. That was one place we wanted to go, and we didn't get to make it there, so hopefully on the way back we'll be able to hit that. But
yeah, the thing about the east coast of Mexico, the Yucatan Peninsula, Mike, is that there are these long stretches of water where there's really nothing. There are little pocket bays, like we went into a little town called Punta Allen, which is just south of Tulum. But you go into these, you go inside the reef, much like Belize, but then you have to get back out, and it's like in the morning when you're leaving, you've got these easterlies right in your face, and the seas are 3 feet tall right from the get-go as soon as the sun comes up. So the getting down the coast of Mexico was more like just transiting, because the bays were beautiful, but they were deserted. They were pretty much little Mayan civilizations on the water that, you know, we didn't really want to go in with jet because we didn't know if there'd be chickens or dogs or something. And so we just ended up in these little pocket bays that were mostly we had to ourselves. We didn't see a single boat except like maybe 10 days into the trip down the coast. We ran into one other boat that we actually were on the dock next to in Isla Mujeres.
Sounds really romantic.
Romantic, honey. Would you say that with the sailing that we did? Or was it where you're like fit to be tied and hit me with a frying pan?
No, in retrospect, yes, it was very romantic. In the moment, it was hard. We knew that the Yucatan coast is some challenging sailing, but it was harder than I think we had anticipated, and so we were just tired. You know, we would get in somewhere and you're just exhausted because you've got, you know, seas on your beam and you're rolling around. Our auto helm is not, you know, as powerful enough to keep up with those seas. So we did a lot of hand steering for, you know, hours and hours on end. And so it was challenging. And another thing is we, you know, just like planning your stops, you know, there were places where we thought we would have, you know, Wi-Fi or cell service that we could kind of look at our stops, and that wasn't the case.
Getting
weather, you know, just things like that were challenging. So romantic, it was beautiful in the visual sense. It was very romantic. In the literal sense of sailing, it was really hard.
Chris, remind us about Vasilando, your vessel.
Vasilando is a Cal 35 monohull. She's pretty small and she's pretty light, but she's a great sailor. We've had her for five years now. Memorial Day weekend was our five-year anniversary of moving onto the boat. She's a great sailing boat, but she is light. And so this trip down the Yucatan coast, when you head south, which the reason I think we didn't see another boat is because everyone else has the good sense to know that you don't go south down the Yucatan Peninsula.
Well, there's a northbound current that runs like up to 4 knots. It's kind of like the Gulf Stream on the East Coast. And so,
yeah, it's tricky sailing. You have to stay close enough to the shore to stay out of the current going south. But when you stay close to shore, you have the reefs. So, you know, it's 3,000 feet deep, and then it goes to 150 feet deep in like no time. So you have this constant state of washing machine. And Vasilando did better than we did, I think. But the sailing was tough. It was pretty, pretty incredible and beautiful and hard and all that stuff.
So Melody, Belize. I've been to Belize. I was there 25 years ago for work, actually. And I think a lot of people don't realize that the Barrier Reef off the coast of Belize is, I think I'm right in saying, is the second largest in the world after the Great Barrier Reef in Australia. And it really is Well, tell us. I mean, it's spectacular, right?
I absolutely fell in love with Belize. And, you know, I'm just a girl from Arkansas. So, you know, even I'd never seen anything like it. You know, we've done some snorkeling and I would go down, you know, snorkeling around Florida and stuff. But we got to Belize and I was excited, you know, to do some snorkeling and to see the reef. And it was beyond my wildest imagination. It was so beautiful. And, you know, I can't even say enough good things about Belize. And it was cool because we got there and we ended up hooking up with a dear friend of ours from that we met in St. Petersburg, Florida. And he was doing the same trip we were. He was just a little bit ahead of us. But he waited in Belize for us. And he is a diver and fisherman and all that. You know, just he's great at all that. So he knew, he had scoped out all the great spots on the reefs to take us. And so we kind of had him as our guide. And it was unbelievable. It was really beautiful.
How much time did you spend in Belize?
We were there
10 days.
About 10 days, 2 weeks maybe. We kind of, at that point, we were eager to get down and up into the Rio Dulce. And we didn't want to rush through there, but we certainly didn't spend as much time as we would have liked, probably. But, you know, like you said, a lot of these little islands, they don't have anything out there. You know, we were kind of hopping around island to island and there were no places to provision, you know, so we caught, you know, some fish, but there were no little markets. You know, like you said, there's just one little building or one little house on this island that's so small that you're like, you couldn't even fit a house on it. And we don't have a water maker on our boat. And that was one of the things I said, you know what, we got to get a water maker next time, because we thought, oh, well, we'll catch rainwater, you know. It didn't rain from the time we left Florida until we got, it was like our maybe second or third to last day in Belize, and we got a downpour and we were able to fill our tanks. But yeah, we were like running out of water. We were running out of food. It was like, we got to get out of here and get somewhere where we can provision again.
Sure, sure. I'll tell you what, I'd love to talk more about your adventures, and we will, but I've got to talk to Chris about something. I mentioned earlier on that you and Melody met in Nashville, where you were both working in the music industry, and then you kind of quit showbiz for a while, although you have made some music since then. However, it turns out, Chris, that you're something of a polymath, because you've turned your hand successfully over the last few years to writing. And that's what we're going to talk about today, because you've written ordinarily non-fiction. That's what I know you for. You know, you're including a terrific book about the intracoastal waterway, which I read recently and which I would recommend to anyone, called What's Up, Ditch. But you've moved into fiction. And I wondered if, I don't know, was the move into writing novels, was it kind of inevitable for you?
No. The move into writing, period, was because just keeping guitars on the boat has been such a exercise in futility. You know, I, as we talked in the last show a year ago, I was working on new music, and I had recorded several songs that I had shipped back to Nashville for all my buddies who were gracious enough to play on it. And none of it worked because my guitars were all out of intonation. So they couldn't put any tracks on top of it without us doing some kind of computer correction. And that would have just sounded like not what I wanted. So the move to writing was because I needed to do something to keep from going crazy. And my wife, like I said, from hitting me with a frying pan because I was standing around with nothing to do. So, you know, You Gotta Go to Know was the first book, because I ended up going to the library for days on end and writing. And then What's Up, Ditch just happened because of our travels. And now Burning Man was something that I've always wanted to write a novel. I'd started a few times and I didn't really know how to do it. So I never completed it until this time. So I guess I kind of stumbled into it because writing music was really frustrating me, just because, you know, when you're equipment, you're in the business. So, you know, if you have equipment that isn't working correctly, it stifles you from doing what you really need to do.
So tell us about Burning Man. Is it a thriller? Is it funny?
Well, it's both. It's a dessert topping. It's a floor wax. It's both. Burning Man's, it's an adventure story. It's an adventure story about love, brotherhood, loyalty, and It's a little bit Thelma Louise and a little bit Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Well, gosh, that's quite a pedigree. And it's set in the music industry, right? So are there people in Nashville who might recognize themselves or elements of themselves if they read the book?
You know, I don't have to worry about that. There are definitely landmarks. Like, I used our favorite bookstore, Howland Books. I used our favorite coffee shop and stuff like that. But the characters are basically mashups of everybody over the last 25 years. And one or two of them is really close to somebody that I might have met or known. But nobody has to worry that I'm not defacing anybody and I'm not slandering anybody. It's pretty much just an amalgamation of events, yeah, that started in Nashville. And it's all set.
All right, sure. So, okay, so it's nothing to do with Burning Man, the festival?
No. And I've had several people, say, oh, man, you're going to run into difficulty just because of the name association. But we're clear on copyrights and stuff, and it's just the name association was – I couldn't change the name. These days it's all about Google ranking and stuff like that, but I couldn't change the name. We looked at A Man on Fire, but that was a Denzel Washington movie. So I'm going to lose either way. I'm going to go up against Denzel or I'm going to go up against Burning Man, but it has nothing to do with the festival in the least.
Okay. So you're already an Amazon best-selling author, right? You Gotta Go to Know is sold very well, I think. And I wondered, do you feel really invested in Burning Man? And by that I mean, was it a bit of fun for you to do it? Or do you kind of feel like there's something riding on this?
I would love to tell you that it was all fun. I would love to say, I was just sitting in the jungle with nothing to do and I wrote this book. But no, I'm totally invested in it. I love it. And there's a lot riding on it just because, if I'm 100% honest, whenever you do a work, any work, for me anyway, whenever I do a record or anything, I want it to resonate with people. And Melody will tell you that I pace a blue streak in the floor and she's just like, honey, lighten up. Just it's out in the universe now. And I'm like, but I want it to work. That has to work. And she's like, oh, just stop. The universe, it will work. It will work. So, yeah, I'm neurotically invested. How's that?
You're listening to Boat Radio. I'm Mike McDowell. I'm talking to Chris and Melody DeCroce, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Bonnie Last Charters is Mallorca's number one experience.
Bonnie Last is a 57-foot converted fishing boat. She was built in 1949 as a herring ring netter in Scotland, and now she's set up for the Mediterranean. Apart from just relaxing in the sunshine on the deck, there's paddleboarding and any kind of exploring you can imagine up along the north coast of Mallorca here, quite often with Maggie the dog in tow as well. Bonnie Last Charters is unique because no charter is really the same. We work really hard to make it the perfect day for each individual client. To be able to go out and enjoy the day with the guests on board is just fantastic.
For more information and to make a booking, visit bonnielastcharters.com.
My name is Matt Rutherford. I am the only person in history to have circumnavigated the Americas nonstop. I've sailed alone across the Atlantic twice. I've crossed the Pacific. I've sailed through the Bering Sea and around Cape Horn. I understand the challenges you will face trying to accomplish your blue water dreams. And I know how important it is to have the right boat. Whether buying a blue water boat or selling your blue water boat, Rogue Wave Yacht Sales has the experience to make that happen. Email me at matt@roguewaveyachtsales.com.
This is Boat Radio. I'm Mike McDowell, and I am talking to Chris and Melody DeCroce, who were my first interviewees a year ago today on Boat Radio. And their interview, that original interview, served as our demo tape for weeks and weeks. So, tens of thousands of people around the world listened to it. before Boat Radio even started, you know, because they were just wondering what on earth was going on. So we're talking about Burning Man at the moment, Chris's new book, Chris's first novel, in fact. And it's partly set in Nashville, but partly on a boat, right?
Yes. You know, the circuitous route of this story takes my main character, Dash Nelson, from the, you know, familiar settings of Nashville, Tennessee. He ends up on a small Western Caribbean island. He's trying to keep a promise that he made to one of his best friends. And he finds himself fighting for his life aboard a sailboat because, you know, we're sailors. So we had to fit that in there somehow. And, you know, I just have to figure out how to get a sailboat in my book. So
yeah. No, sure. I mean, the thing is, you know, if it's an adventure on land and on sea, I mean, we're looking at movie rights now, right? Presumably.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that, but yeah, I've had a couple, when I previewed the book to a couple friends of mine, you know, I have friends in the film industry and stuff, and they said, dude, this should be a movie. So I said, wait, just let's see if it goes, let's see if we sell 100 copies first.
Yeah, let's see if it's a book, first of all, yeah. But yeah, presumably you have sold 100 copies already, right? And it's selling, and so... have you had any interest, any serious interest yet?
Not serious. I had a buddy in LA send me a text and he said, we got to turn this into a screenplay. So, I'm like, I'm down with it. You know, me, Mike, I'm down with anything. I mean, if it's good and we can work on it and have fun, I'm down with it. Let's do it. So yeah, we'll see what happens. I mean, it's doing really well right now. And above my wildest dreams, and you know, I'm all about the work, man. If it's good and it resonates, I say just keep going.
So, Melody, you work from home. You're a copy editor and a proofreader and various things. You work remotely for various businesses in the U.S. And now you've got competition for that Wi-Fi, right?
She still wins. There's no competition.
Well, and I tell you, you know, I always use the excuse, it's like, honey, because, you know, in addition to the other things that I've got my hands in, I'm also his agent / business manager / you know, whatever, until we can afford to pay somebody a lot more to do that and take that off my plate. So I'm always like researching, like, honey, you know, we got to try this, we got to do this. And his head's just spinning because, you know, I'm the technical girl and I'm like, we got to be here and we got to do this. And he's not, you know, I'm more the marketing person. He's the artist. So,
yeah, I think there's no doubt who, everybody is quite clear about who's actually in charge. So you're something of an expert, right, when it comes to, you know, blogging and social media and developing an online presence and all that stuff. That's part and parcel of what you do as well. So I wondered, are we seeing Chris on the brink of, you know, a skyrocketing online profile here?
I hope so. That's what I'm shooting for. He keeps telling me to tone it down. You know, every artist hates self-promotion, so I'm trying to do some of the promotion for him. And if I do my job well, you know, that remains to be seen, but I'm really striving for that. So people will, they'll love us and they'll hate us. The ones that love us, they'll be seeing his name everywhere and they'll love it. And then some people are going to say, God, shut this guy up, shut her up, you know?
No.
I see Taylor Swift in my future.
No.
Maybe she'll be in the movie. She's bound to do a movie sooner or later.
That's it. Shake it off. I'll do an acoustic version, Dylan version. Shake it off.
Still a million.
Don't. My. I have a 5-year-old daughter, so Shake It Off is what I hear in the car all the time.
Like, I'm sure, times in a row.
Nobody told me that fatherhood meant watching the same cartoons on repeat again and again and again, and listening to the same tunes in the car. Anyway, Chris, listen, I've got to ask about the music, right? Because, like I mentioned earlier on, you kind of dropped out of the music business way back, you know, purposely, but not before you'd become, you know, pretty successful. And so I know that you're sitting on a stack of new songs. When are we going to get to hear those?
Oh, you know, man, I say it every day. It's the recording on the boat is really hard, and I'm trying to, it's funny, we went to a live mic night the other night, and there was a guy sitting up there saying something about his studio, and I said, a studio in Guatemala? I need to meet that guy. So I have a ton of songs that I like that we wanted to get done for this record. I have to figure out a really good way to do them. Getting back to Nashville is just really expensive right now because we're in the middle of nowhere. So, you know, I don't want to leave Mel here with Jet on the boat and by herself to go back there, but we're trying to figure that out. This is kind of the, like I said, the book was kind of a little bridge, and, you know, if it keeps doing well and we get some money and stuff, I'll jump on a plane and go back to Nashville and cut these tunes. I mean, in the book, there are lyrics to the new songs, there's lyrics to the old songs, and we actually tied it all together because we didn't want to, you know, I'm not trying to abandon a music career, so we've actually, for anybody that buys the book, we've included the soundtrack for the book, which we feel is a real different approach because I don't know many books that have a soundtrack, but...
That's brilliant. I love that. That's a really good idea.
It's cool, right? My main character finds himself in some situations where he starts thinking about lyrics or starts singing some songs. And so because of licensing and fun stuff like that, we used my songs. And so Melody and I were sitting around one night and we said, God, why don't we just make a soundtrack for the movie? Because we featured these songs in there, or for the book. I'm sorry. We make a soundtrack for the book. And so, when you buy Burning Man, you go to ChristaCroce.com. And get your soundtrack. And also there's 4 free chapters at ChristaCroce.com too, if people just want to read the first 4 chapters of the book without any kind of commitment, you know, because there's a lot of people out there afraid to make a commitment.
No, I think that's a really, really good idea. Yeah, that's brilliant. But, you know, when you said about, you know, sorry to interrupt, but you were talking about the open mic night, right? And there's a guy with a studio. So why do you have to fly back to Nashville? I mean, I know you got a whole bunch of friends there, and they've probably got like a $10 million studio with all the gadgets, and it looks like the flight deck of a Boeing 747, and a lot of, you know, I've been in studios like this, obviously working in radio, but and obviously a lot of your friends are musicians there and stuff, but couldn't you do a kind of Guatemalan version of the Buena Vista Social Club, like with this guy's studio?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I can't work in a room. I can't work in a big room with Neve consoles and $15,000 microphones. I need to be in the room where we're duct taping something from the ceiling, and you know, you're using the box for the guy's washing machine as a kick drum. So I am totally, you know, if I can figure out a way to put together some players for me, going back to Nashville would just be the players, my buddies. You know, the guys that are all over my first 3 records, John Jackson, Randy Liego. I can't even mention enough names. That those guys are they're the best in the business, Mike. I mean, they're all out. Actually, they may not even be there because they're all, you know, playing with Melissa Etheridge and the Beach Boys and all this stuff. But for me, just going back to Nashville would be to find a funky little room and to get my players, my buddies, and it would be like old home week cutting songs with guys I know who know what I play and what I write. But down here would be just as fun if I could find the caliber of musician that, you know, we could sit down and hash out something fun. And I would love to have some local guys and just do it actually a down and dirty recording in the jungle of Guatemala. We got howler monkeys in the background and all kinds of stuff going on. So I'm totally cool with that.
That would be fantastic. Why don't I get John Jackson down to Guatemala?
Yeah, you know, I think JJ would have I think his head would spin around, but he would, I don't know if he'd go for it, but I'll give him a call and tell him that you said so.
No, I think that's a fantastic idea. I think it's great. Anyway, listen, the book is Burning Man by Chris DeCroce. You'll find it on Amazon. And I will also put a link to the purchase page on the Boat Radio website, boatradio.tv. Melody, last time we all chatted, I asked Chris to choose a song from his back catalogue. He picked Hit and Run. This time, let's play your favourite one of Chris's songs. Play us out. Which one do you choose? Oh, and why? Which one do you choose and why?
Okay. Well, I love so many of his songs, but one that I always find myself playing is a song called California. It's off of his EP, Songs From Before, and it's just a fun travel feel-good song. So, yeah, I think that's my favorite.
Fantastic. Chris and Melody DeCroce aboard Vacilando in Guatemala. Great to talk to you both again. Thank you so much.
It was great to talk to you. And I also wanted to congratulate you.
That's what we were. Yeah, we wanted to go before you go out with this bumper out. We wanted to say 500,000 downloads, probably closer to 1 million now.
Yeah,
yes?
Yeah. 600,000 now. I will hit 1 million by the end of the summer. Yeah.
Oh, man. How cool is that?
It's amazing. I can't believe it.
Well, you should totally believe it. Look at you, man. You're just like off the charts. It's so good to be with you. It's so great that we were the first. It's so nice to keep keeping in touch. I love talking to you, man. You do an incredibly great job at what you do.
That's very kind of you. Thank you so much, Chris and Melody DeCroce. Once again, thank you for talking to Boat Radio. Here is California.
Let's take a ride to California, where everything's fine in California. My Cadillac's laying on the bed, and I'm singing something she said, and her sweet one has just set me course. Don't feel like love here no more. So let's take a ride to California, where everything's fine in California. We can be happy, we won't care where we go. Just pray that the minutes go by so slow. No one on I-65
Our aim at Street Invest is to put a trustworthy adult into the lives of street children so that they can support them in creating the most positive paths for their lives in the future. We work around the world, working on the street with the children where they are. For such a large group of children, the amount of funding available is tiny. Really, the funding that keeps organisations like Street Invest going comes from individual donors. Street children are the most abused, neglected, violated children, yet they are also the most resourceful, responsive and resilient children that we could have the honour of working with.
For more information or to make a donation, visit streetinvest.org.